The funny thing is, I had that game and I never played it, and I traded it in, wrapping intact.
I love being a troll because you just get to piss so many people off.
What would you rather be inside of? A giant robot or magical girl?
Now we're stuck with you.
I'm pretty sure I'm on a higher plane of existence than you.
I was just about to bring that up. Nintendo, I'm not even going to say anything.
We shall give you a quality show today. I'll be giving you at least 78%.
Launching!
Hello, everybody, indeed. Welcome to the Anavision Podcast. This is episode 280. I am J-Ro, joined by XCOM.
Hello.
And Amro.
Yo.
Steve out this week due to lack of interest.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, so on today's show, we have the usual bit of news from video games and anime, and in our discussion, Amro and I will be talking about Dragon Ball Super Broly that just came out. We'll be talking about some anime from this season, some of the new shows that are airing. And it'll primarily be me talking about Super Bowl 53 predictions between the Rams and the Patriots. So let's.
We're just trying to get our numbers up.
Yeah, we got to get the tag there, NFL. get like whatever we can off of them.
I can imagine people.
You got to call it the big game. You can't. Gotta
oh
make
wow,
it
we're gonna get the, we're gonna
oh,
get
yeah,
sued.
That's right, the superb owl.
I wonder if they also trademarked that just to be dicks.
Yeah, the big game, the big dance. So let's get into our news. This first story is an older one, but because of how our podcasts have been structured this month, we haven't had an opportunity to talk about it. Is the split up between Activision and Bungie. So when Bungie left Microsoft, they signed a deal with Activision. Activision was the publisher for Destiny, and now we're at a point where Activision has relinquished the publishing rights to Destiny to Bungie, and now Bungie is just a small little indie dev working on Destiny.
All little indie devs.
Yeah. Yeah, they can use that excuse when they're like, hey, you know, things are broke. Hey, we're just an indie dev. there was rumors of Bungie execs popping champagne. Like, they were, of course, very excited that they were kind of free from Activision. So it'll be very interesting to see, as a Destiny player, what happens, not in the immediate future, but over the next year or two, to kind of see what Bungie
does. I'm thinking Destiny 3 is going to be a real telling of what's going to happen with Bungie as a company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even though, like, you know, on paper this sounds exciting because we always talk about, like, the big bad publishers, you know, hamstringing the developers, and some of the things that I think about that I've been sort of annoyed with Destiny over the years of loving and playing the game as much as I have. It's not Activision that made Foreign and Last Word dominant for like 8 months in the first year of Destiny or something like that. Or it wasn't really even Activision that said, you know, we need you to get an Eververse store for microtransactions and stuff. That was mainly Bungie. So
Wait, I thought it was Activision because they wanted additional cash flow.
Well, from what I've heard, that was primarily Bungie for some reporting. That sort of falls more on them than Activision. But at the current point, it doesn't make me feel like, oh man, I'm super excited to play Destiny right now. I mean, I play it, but it doesn't make me feel any better. We'll just have to see by Destiny 3.
Yeah, it's not going to make any, like, well, I assume that they were already working on a third. Then the question becomes, would they bother with a third? Or they originally, what they were saying is that they were just going to keep upgrading Destiny, kind of like your classic MMO style, mm-hmm. like the entire 10-year lifespan or whatever. Yeah. Clearly, that did not happen.
Yeah, that would be the ideal.
Yeah, I would love for it to be like that. Yeah. Like, I'm fine with buying periodic. I'm sorry?
like expansions, like for like you know using the old MMO model.
Yes, in fact, I think more people would be okay with that, or maybe not. I don't know, because people seem to be finicky about paying for stuff. Yeah. It's like you come out with an expansion. Oh, it's not big enough. This shouldn't have been an expansion. We should have got it for free. I'm like, well, you can't get everything for free in a video game. I mean, geez, people.
Yeah.
Not if you want them to keep making new stuff, but...
I know.
Yeah. I think the gut reaction is to see that, because, you know, I don't play Destiny, but you hear all about the monetization and stuff like that, especially from Destiny 2. And I think the gut reaction to this news is that, oh, that's going to go away because Bungie was being forced to do that. So it is interesting to hear, you know, that like some of those decisions were made by Bungie. So, mm-hmm.
I mean,
now that they don't have deep pockets behind them, we might see like an increase of stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah. And maybe like the content drops won't be as frequent as what we've been seeing.
Yeah, they lost an entire studio.
That's going to be interesting with the PC developer Vicarious Visions. They're no longer involved in it because they were the ones that were working on the PC version, and they also made the Warmind expansion for the first year of Destiny.
That's a good point. I forgot about that. Hmm. So, yeah, I wonder how that's gonna work.
Mm-hmm. Time will tell. Yeah.
Yes.
Next up, Respawn, the developers of the Titanfall series. There's a rumor going around that they are set to announce their Battle Royale game, which will be called Apex Legends, next week. This is a Titanfall spinoff, so it'll be sort of in the Titanfall world, and you'll have the pilots that we play as in the Titanfall games. And early word is that there won't be Titans in the game, which is pretty interesting because what's a Titanfall game without Titans? But at the same time, it is pretty hard to, you know, the Battle Royale system is that you get one life, you die, you go back, and it would be hard to balance with Titans and
who
pilots.
Needs balance in a Titanfall game?
Yeah. But it was kind of interesting how this news was announced. Like, I followed the Titanfall subreddit, and way before this was announced, I had heard that there were these popular streamers that were just randomly playing Titanfall 2. Like, this game that came out in 2016 or something. It's like, why are they playing it now? And then, sure enough, EA seemed to have invited a bunch of influencers and YouTubers and all these content creators to try out what Apex Legends will be when it's announced, and so that's kind of the way word got out with this.
They're practicing.
Yeah, and that's going to be the, you know, it's not going to be just like, you know, journalists and all that stuff that get invited to those things. It's going to be all these influencers, because you can get so many people making so many videos saying, hey, this is our game, hype it up. Yeah, but for me, like, I'm a big fan of the Titanfall series, but, you know, a game like that without Titans, and I'm not too into Battle Royale, like, I've tried Fortnite and stuff, but it never really fascinated me enough to keep trying, keep playing, and keep trying to get a win.
Because you're an old man, dude. You're just not with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't get...
I'm maybe just too old for that. I like Titanfall, but Battle Royale stuff, I could never get into either.
Yeah. And also kind of curious to know what happened with how we got to this point with Respawn. It's like, were they working on Titanfall 3 and it just spawned into this, or were they having issues with development of Titanfall 3? That's another one that I'll be kind of curious to see as time goes by. Next up, we have a string of Nintendo news to talk about. First up, Metroid Prime 4, which was announced at E3 a couple years ago. Unfortunately, development has to be restarted. Nintendo of Japan came out with a video and said it wasn't up to their quality standards, so they are going to be handing it off to Retro Studios, who worked on the previous Metroid Prime games. And
that must be a major slap in the face to whoever was developing it before. Like, yeah, you know what? You suck, so we're going to scrap that entirely, even though we were waiting for it to come out some point this year. Yeah, you suck, so we're going to give it to somebody else.
Well, to me, it's funny that they're giving it back to the people who made it in the first place. You know,
it was
like,
probably a scheduling conflict, which is the reason why they weren't making it in the first place.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's possible. I think it's just like, hey, maybe that should have been the way it was from the beginning.
that's what I was going to say, is that that's the way it should have been from the start. And because now, at earliest, like a 2022, 2023 release for this game, by the time, you know, the next Switch is set to be announced or something, hopefully not.
I was actually thinking that. I was like, it sounds like it's going to be more like a sunsetting game for the Switch.
Yeah.
Like, but by that time, everybody should have a really strong grasp of how to squeeze every little bit out of the Switch. Mm-hmm. That might be like the best thing for Metroid, maybe.
Hey, yeah. let's think about it this way. How about Kingdom Hearts 3 just came out, right?
Uh-huh.
So we need that white whale. We need another white whale, and Metroid Prime is going to be the next one.
Need that something to keep us hungry.
The Switch isn't hurting for games at the moment. This year, we still have Pokemon Emblem, and I know there's some other titles coming out this year. So the Switch isn't doing too bad, and we haven't seen E3 yet. So I'm sure there's going to be some stuff for 2020.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have some stuff to tide us over.
I've tried to play some Fire Emblem games before, particularly I think it was Fates.
Yeah,
it was one of the
one of the
DS
versions,
ones.
Yeah. The Nor and the other family.
I realized halfway through that I was like, man, I should have played the one with Camilla in it. but also just like, I played it and I didn't get too far in it before I ended up like trading it back in for some reason. So I'll try the one that comes out on Switch, but you know, like maybe this will be the one that sticks. Like, I do like the characters now that I've played Fire Emblem Heroes a lot, and I even played the Dynasty Warriors spinoff. So, you know, maybe this will be the one.
Next up, Nintendo delayed the Mario Kart Tour mobile game that was set to come out in summer 2019, but they also announced that Dr. Mario will be coming to mobile in 2019. That seems like a better fit.
I think so,
Mario,
too.
You know, holding the phone the way that we do now, you know, tapping the button and moving around. Yeah, I'm sure that'll be pretty fun to play on mobile.
I don't care about Dr. Mario at all.
But it's a puzzle game. Like, those work so well as time wasters on a phone.
I guess so. I was looking more forward to, like, Mario Kart.
You can always play 8 Deluxe, or is it 9? I can't. I lost track.
It's
this point.
8 Deluxe, on the Switch.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're due for 9 at some point soon.
Yeah. Hopefully in the next, hopefully like in 2020. Yeah, they've been riding that 8 for quite a while.
They've been still releasing stuff for it.
Mm-hmm.
And on a side note, and I'm sorry to kind of break up the news, but like Nintendo has been doing a great job at just slow drip feeding us content for their games. Like Splatoon is still getting new content. I'm just amazed about how long it's been, and they've just still been making stuff.
Yeah. And even with, like, you know, Smash Bros. Is the main thing now, to still see that game get supported in that way is pretty cool. They just had a recent, was that competition or the fest or whatever, Pancakes versus Waffles?
Oh, yeah, the Go Fest. They periodically do that, and that's a great idea. I know Smash Brothers is trying to emulate that with the different spirits, but I can't bring myself to care about the spirits nearly as much as the way Splatoon does the Go Fest thing. Or not Go Fest. Now I'm mixing that up with Pokemon.
I forget what the name was called.
It's Splatfest.
Splatfest, yeah. I remember.
I knew that.
So I remember the first one being ketchup versus mayo.
Yeah.
And the way the mayo would shoot on the floor.
They had If memory serves, they had to change it slightly for the American audience because of the way it looked. And like, why, people? Yeah. Why does it make
really they should just change the condiment, because here, mayo isn't as big a rival as mustard is.
I guess.
Yeah. There are some mayo defenders, though.
There are.
I'm the kind of me as a Puerto Rican, I'm over here like making mayo ketchup for my tostones. So I think two people in our audience got that, and I'm one of them.
And our last Nintendo story is that there's rumors that they're going to be making a smaller version of the Switch with even more portability in mind, and it might release this year.
I don't know how I feel about this. I kind of think that it's dumb to do. I understand that they need to kind of make an analog to the 3DS. But at the same time, the Switch kind of lives and dies by its accessories. And I'm like, if you change the size of the Switch, all the accessories. Yeah. So I don't know if Nintendo would do that. But then again, maybe they would.
They would. That means they can sell all new accessories.
Well, see, here's the thing. I'm thinking if they were to do this, it wouldn't be like a Switch. It would be something that could accept Switch games, but it'd be more like a handheld.
Yeah, it's something where you can't detach the Joy-Con. Like, that just stays on, so you can make the screen a little smaller.
You don't even have to make the freaking screen smaller. You see the bezel on the Switch? You just cut down the bezel, and that just makes it smaller by default. My thing, though, is I'm sorry. I'm losing my train of thought here. I lost my train of thought here. It's just I don't see Nintendo really doing this, but I've been wrong about worse things, so.
Next up, Dragon Ball FighterZ has a new season pass with some new fighters. They announced Jiren and Videl are in the game. There's going to be Broly from the movie, among other fighters.
Speaking of Dragon Ball news, this is something that I guess I forgot to add, but they announced a new Dragon Ball action RPG for this year, 2019. So,
oh, yeah, that's right.
The trailer for that actually looked pretty cool because the art style or the art direction kind of resembles FighterZ a little bit, maybe not quite as anime-esque, but it still looks like the anime, and it looks like it'll be retelling the story kind of from the beginning of at least Z. So you know, I think it's been a long time since we had a game that was just, you know, the story of Dragon Ball, and I think it's cool that you know, they've done kind of like action RPGs kind of like that before, but they were like really small scale on the Game Boy Advance and stuff, so to see a modern take on that on current gen systems I think would be really cool. So I'd like to see more of it.
And our last anime story is about Gen Fukunaga, who is stepping down as the general manager of Funimation, and he will be in a chairman role as they search for his replacement. So with the acquisition of Funimation by Sony, this is another domino that falls as the company kind of changes course.
Yeah.
I kind of find that a funny comment to just, he's stepping down from GM, but he's going to be chairman. I'm like, that seems like a step up to me. But
well, I think it's like one of those things where, well, yeah, is he becoming chairman of the board or something? Like,
oh, he's in a chairman in an advisory role.
Okay.
Which basically means at sooner rather than much later, he'll be out.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, that's how things go.
Yeah.
Business.
Yep. All right, so we're going to play some intermission music, and when we come back, we'll be talking about the Dragon Ball Super movie. Get ready, it is time for our discussion segment. And first up, we Amuro and I are going to be talking about the Dragon Ball Super Broly movie that came out a couple weeks ago. This is a, you know, before we get into this, I posted on Facebook about how there's so many good, interesting anime movies that are coming out recently. So, like, we had this movie. A Silent Voice just recently had a screening. Next week, I Want to Eat Your Pancreas is coming out. Gundam
Narrative. That one looks like a tearjerker. I've got my ticket for that one.
Yeah, I actually just bought it before we recorded for that one. Gundam Narrative in mid-February. Fate Stay Night, Heaven's Feel, movie 2. And then we haven't seen much past April, but it's a good time for anime movies.
I think Hunter X Hunter is also getting a screening too, the new Hunter X Hunter movie.
Oh yeah, that's right. Although I think that might have already passed.
Ah, well.
It was like in January 30th, if I remember.
It's how much attention I've been paying.
Yeah, it wasn't local, so I didn't try to find a ticket nearby.
Yeah. But I mean, that's just, you know, I think that speaks to, I think the new Eureka 7 movie might also be getting a screening at some point. Yeah. I think that speaks to just the volume of the fact that there's so many more anime movies getting screeners that, like, we don't have to wait like we used to for these theatrical films. And, you know, Broly in particular was 1 month to almost to the day that we had to wait from the theatrical release in Japan to America. And, you know, we saw it in theaters dubbed, and it was this might be jumping the gun, but it was fantastic.
Yeah. In the pantheon of shonen movies, with this and all the past Dragon Balls, of course, and Naruto's and One Piece, this really stands to me as, like, maybe the best of all those movies. Like,
oh yeah,
it was phenomenal at pretty much everything it did, I think, from beginning to end.
How do you make me want to see this movie, like, immediately? I have not seen this movie.
It's the movie that you need to watch. Like, I'm surprised you didn't see it when it came out, XCOM, but, like,
there are reasons.
I know, family and whatnot, but like, to me, it's the kind of thing that revitalizes fandom. Broly, I think, is already a character that, you know, people who love Dragon Ball are familiar with from a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And I think what I really enjoyed about this movie is that it brought Broly into canon, along with a lot of other things that technically were not canon before, like Bardock and, you know, spoilers, but not really, because it was in all the trailers, Gogeta. Mm-hmm. This is the first canon appearance of Gogeta that's not like he, the movie Fusion Reborn technically never counted, let's say.
Yeah, because what they do in this movie is they front load all of the story stuff at the beginning with, like, the planet Vegeta, and showing how Frieza was given control of the planet by King Cold, and how that planet destroyed. And I always was thinking about, in the past, how they were always like, Goku and Vegeta are the last Saiyans, but then you'd always see these things pop up where, like, hey, here's a Saiyan that was in, and here's a Saiyan there, and it's like, that was ridiculous. They're just, like, adding Saiyans, but they did a really cool thing with that by talking about how they would go to other planets on missions, and then Frieza just randomly decides, hey, it's time to destroy this planet.
Yeah, he's like, they kept in the whole thing about him being, should we just go ahead and just say full spoilers on this one? Do you want to talk about our general, thoughts first?
And then... Yeah, let's go into spoilers.
Yeah, so.
I have not seen this movie.
It's Dragon Ball. You'll be fine. because let me just put it this way.
We can talk about before.
I spoiled the movie for myself. I spoiled the movie for myself, and I went into the theater and watched it, and I still just absolutely love the movie. Like,
okay,
but you know, it's not too big. I don't think we'll spoil too big of anything. But what can I say? The stuff at the beginning was great. The fact that they showed off Frieza and the Saiyans and all that stuff. But, like, what I really appreciated about it was that it made Broly a real character.
Mm-hmm.
that he just was not before this point.
Yeah, they did a really nice job of giving him a sort of a human quality, I guess is one way to put it, with how he sort of communicated with Chi-Lai and the other guy that she was with. Gives him sort of makes him more sympathetic.
Yeah. Yeah, of course you would remember Chi-Lai's name.
Yeah. Who wouldn't? She's basically like, I was trying to figure out like what species is she, because she's basically like whatever the alien version of Bulma is.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
She's like a green and sassier Bulma. Well, you know, Bulma's pretty sassy anyway, but yeah. feisty I think might be the word, but. Yeah, they gave Broly a waifu.
Yeah.
Which I kind of was like, yeah, Broly deserves, you know, some loving. Granted, it never got like romantic or anything in the movie, but the fact that, you know, Broly had some interaction with characters other than the ones he was going to fight, I thought was really great. Paragus was a bad guy who had like, I felt like he had actual motivation to hate Vegeta, and, you know, and then he also ran into, like, you know, Goku was there. Like, the main conflict was against Vegeta because, you know, the way that Vegeta's father had exiled them. Yeah. And I do like that they removed that one big sticking point of Broly hating Kakarot because of he cried as a baby.
Yeah.
Like, thank God they did away with that. So Broly just came off as like a gentle giant almost, like the fact that like he was let me put it another way, Tarzan. He was basically Tarzan in this movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. who had a Hulk problem.
Right. Broly's character was really good, and the fighting, which in terms of time, I have to think it felt like the last hour. Movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was just straight ahead, like, action between Broly and Vegeta and Goku.
Yeah, so, I mean, there was a lot of fighting, and it was all beautifully animated. There was even one kind of section that was, like, done in 3D CG, and I like, personally, like, you could tell it was CG, mm-hmm. but to me, that's not a benchmark of whether it was good or not anymore. I thought it was actually really great, and they used the camera to great effect during that sequence. And there's even like one big the big iconic Kamehameha final flash that they do that you see in the trailers. I thought that was really cool. Mm-hmm.
So I haven't watched too much of Super, but there's a moment where Goku goes into like a red form, like
yeah,
I know it's like Kaioken or something.
No, that was Super Saiyan God.
So, okay.
So. Yeah, so that was introduced in Battle of Gods back when, when was that? 2009.
Was it? That long ago?
No, it might not have been that long ago, but it was a while ago. It was Battle of Gods, and then there was Resurrection F. That one introduced the blue form. So. This was the first time that we see Vegeta go Super Saiyan God, which is the red form.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool. The escalation of the fight was great. Because Broly, Broly starts off, he's strong, but he's not nearly as strong. Like, he doesn't know how to go Super Saiyan, for example.
Right.
And he's not nearly as strong as Vegeta and Goku, who have been fighting their entire lives, which Broly had also had been, you know, surviving for his entire life. But he had never fought someone... he doesn't know martial arts, for example.
Yeah.
You know, like he's just a strong dude. And to see him kind of like rage out and grow stronger throughout the fight, I thought was fantastic. I thought it was great that Vegeta got to go first. speaking of that, what was your theater experience like? Where did you see it, and what was your crowd like?
I saw it on a Friday afternoon. And I would say it was more than half filled
mm-hmm.
for it. Yeah, and I was kind of surprised. I thought, you know, Friday, you know, afternoon showing, I thought it would just be a few seats. But I was surprised how many people were in the theater
for that. I saw it on opening night. and my theater was full. Mm-hmm. Like there was no empty seats except for like maybe the very front two rows. To the point where like the group that I went in with, because there was no assigned seating, I just found a seat and sat by myself because I was like, we're not going to be able to sit together, and I don't want to sit in the front row. Yeah. But the theater was hyped throughout the entire thing. Like as soon as Broly threw that first punch, everyone was like, oh, just screaming. And every hard hit, every transformation, like the theater was losing its mind. I was like, man, this is fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds fun.
But yeah, like that's just how exciting that fight was. So seeing it and you know, we were talking about seeing it in theaters and stuff, like surrounded by fans, mm-hmm. was, I think, one of my better experiences with Dragon Ball, just period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's impressive for how long that fight went on. I mean, there's never a dull moment
in
the whole thing, and it never felt like things were, you know, we need to slow it down a little bit here. It's just like, yeah, just keep going. Just keep Broly, keep getting stronger and keep challenging these guys. It was really good.
I thought even when Goku stepped in, I liked how he had almost a little heart to heart moment with Broly, where he was like, man, I fought a lot of bad people, but you're not one of them. But you know, Broly of course is just too angry at that point to back down. So without giving away the ending, I appreciated how it did end.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because it feels like this movie isn't just a one-off. It has, I think it'll have ramifications for whatever Dragon Ball continues to be after this point. Mm-hmm. So like if Super comes back, this movie is very much a continuation of where Super left off, and hopefully a starting, you know, a jumping off point for whatever comes next.
Yeah, whether it's a season or another movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was fantastic. I really enjoyed that movie, and as soon as I got home, I started playing some Dragon Ball FighterZ, which I hadn't played in a long time.
So it's all hyped. It's exactly. It's the kind of thing that it's like, man, I want to like get back into Dragon Ball stuff again. if you like you said, you hadn't watched Super, does this make you want to go back and you know, go through Super again, or are you still waiting for the dub?
Yeah, I want to wait for an easy way to watch the dub.
Yeah.
And I know it's been on Toonami and stuff. But
it, you know, these days how it's really hard to, you know, watch live TV.
Yeah, it is. So I was looking through Funimation, just like, could I watch it there? Then you got to subscribe, which I don't know, maybe I'll do for a month or something.
Yeah
But I mean, you know, I was definitely glad it was dubbed. I was glad I could watch it dubbed, because I can't watch it subbed anymore.
I honestly, I agree. Like, even though I watched all of Super subbed, like, I'm, you know, I grew up with English Dragon Ball Z, and that's maybe why I'm like, I mean, I like dubs, right? Yeah. But mm-hmm. I'm perfectly okay with switching back and forth on Dragon Ball, but I'm glad it was dubbed, and I think they did a great job. Mm-hmm. Frieza was hamming it up throughout the entire movie. You know, Broly, again, like, had actual speaking lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway.
And I like the joke, not to spoil, about why people were looking for the Dragon Balls.
Yeah, the reason for why they needed the Dragon Balls was very good. I think some people didn't like that. But I was like, man, look, man, this is Dragon Ball. Mm-hmm. Dragon Ball has always been silly.
Yeah.
So I think it's nice that they actually, like, you know, kind of addressed that fact in this movie.
Yeah, and for it was like kind of like peacetime. So they weren't really, you know, like, the good guys weren't looking to save the world for particularly or anything. They didn't plan for Broly to come or whatever. All right. So, Dragon Ball Super. Great movie. Next up, we're going to kind of do a general anime talk. Maybe this might be anime chat or something that's changing formats to be a part of the regular episodes now. So with XCOM here, who wasn't able to join us for the Winter 19 preview, I guess we can kind of get started with you. What are you watching and enjoying so far from this season?
Right now, I am watching Sword Art, which is pretty obvious. In addition to that, I am really enjoying Rise of the Shield Hero and the Spec Ops Magical Girl show, which the name, I know it's Spec Ops something.
Yeah,
Spec Ops Girl, Magical Girl, Oscar.
Spec Ops, yeah.
I have seen a few episodes of Circlet Princess. But yeah, that's pretty much all that I've been watching this season.
What show was that? What princess?
Circlet Princess?
Yes.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, it's one that's not airing on Crunchyroll as far as I can tell.
Okay. I see. It's one of those that you gotta sail the high seas for then.
Yeah, see, because of my setup, I never really care about where things are airing.
Yeah, I just pretty much watch what's available on High Dive and Crunchyroll. But yeah, it's I think it's like my first reaction to the season was like it's decent, but I didn't think it was going to be quite as good as maybe last season was. I've actually ended up watching more shows. Price of Smiles was on that, like, was briefly mentioned last time we talked about these, and I hadn't seen it yet. I caught up on it. I think it's actually really good.
I need to watch that series.
Yeah, it's actually got giant robots in it, so, you know.
The funny thing is, because I wasn't, like, in here when everybody was talking about series, I didn't have a frame of reference going into the season.
Yeah.
So I've just picked a handful of shows to watch. Just randomly. I haven't really, and not really going off of any kind of reviews or anything. I mean, Sword Art Online, I was going to watch it regardless.
Of course, yeah.
And I think I randomly stumbled into Spec Ops, and I was like, oh, this is another, like, reverse Magical Girl show where it takes that premise and turns it on its head. And I love shows like that.
Yeah, you know, I talked about it last time that I said, like, I don't like deconstruction. Well, one, I really hate it when people use that word in general. But, like, I don't like edgy magical girls that shows that much. But this one, like, to me is different a little bit because, like, it puts, like, it's not just, oh, watch these magical girls kill themselves because, you know, they, you know, being a magical girl actually sucks. Or
this is
like,
after the happy ending.
Yeah, exactly. but it's also like it's putting magical girls in a real world setting and like mm-hmm. being like, okay, the public knows about magical girls and also the danger that they face. So, you know, they would of course find ways to exploit them and use them mm-hmm. in military settings and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, that to me is a more tasteful, not tasteful because it's pretty edgy. Exactly. But I mean, like it's a more kind of like a palatable, edgy magical girl show. But J-Ro, you said you liked it when we watched it. What do you think so far?
Yeah, so far I've really enjoyed the series. I think it's a little more than what I thought it would be mm-hmm. From the first episode, which I did like, but it impressed me into kind of what it's become. And you know, watching Asuka, it's kind of interesting to see a character like who is a magical girl kind of want to avoid fighting or being a part of it because of the trauma that came.
She has PTSD. Like they legit go into PTSD in this show, and I'm like, I never really thought about that.
Yeah,
going through all this trauma,
especially when you're young,
nightmares and everything. Yeah,
right. Yeah, like she's just like a 16-year-old girl. It doesn't really look 16.
I was like, I was like,
all the major female characters have the exact same body type.
Yeah, the character designer blessed the girls with the thickness.
Yes.
And you know, speaking of the way the show is, they said one thing that I was like, you know what? I wish every magical girl show pointed this out. They mentioned that their magic keeps people from identifying them.
Yeah, it's a magical, like, perception field.
I'm like, yeah. You know what? A simple sentence like that makes all the difference in the world. Because it's like, how do people not realize who these people are? Because they've been seen by people who know them very well. It is like, oh, well. Yeah.
Well, sometimes.
This magical girl.
Yeah. Well, sometimes what people like to do is like, we want to fight in a far off field away from the city where nobody can see us. Or we'll put up some barrier that'll like make people forget or something.
Yeah. It's not like in Sailor Moon where they put on like a cute outfit and then no one knew who they were.
Yeah. That's really what I'm talking about. It's like, because Sailor Moon was terrible at that. Like, oh, Sailor Moon. And it's like, it's not even like Superman Clark Kent where like he had glasses on. It's like, it's literally the same outfit and you can't tell who this girl is.
Yeah.
Oh.
How'd you guys feel about the most recent episode?
I was surprised.
I did not think they would actually get to the torture part. I thought that they would be interrupted like every other anime.
Yeah, it was a little hard to watch.
Yeah, it was like, damn. Like, can Narumi repair that?
I was wondering about that. I was like, so what's gonna happen now?
When they like. To, you know, grabbed her and ran away. I was like, did she grab the arm?
Is it still hanging there?
I was like, oof.
Yeah, we'll have to see. But what else, Amru?
So I guess if you want to move on, a show that I think XCOM would really like is Quintessential Quintuplets. Which, you know, I'm surprised you haven't seen that one yet, but what have you continued to watch that one, Jairo?
Yes, I have. And it's been really fun. I have decided there is no best girl yet until they get their grades up.
you're gonna wait to hold off on whose best girl is until they actually can, you know, pass a test.
Yeah, whoever's the first to get a passing grade, that's best girl.
Like, I can't decide honestly between, like, I think they're all good. Nino has been a little bit more bitchy.
Yeah,
but she's
bottom. She'll always be bottom for me.
I can, like, to me, like, I guess I can kind of tell that she like actually cares about her family, like. I still like Itsuki because she's her qualifying trait is that she's main girl.
Yeah.
Miku, I think, is the one that's been like the runaway favorite so far.
Yeah, because she's the quickest to sort of warm up to Uesugi a little bit, and she's actually
technically Yotsuba was the quickest to warm up because she was nice to him from the beginning.
Oh yeah. Yeah, she is generally nice, but as far as like being actively interested in studying,
yeah,
I'd say Miku was the first. Although the bad thing for her is that Uesugi is still in this spot where he doesn't really have any feelings, and you can kind of tell Miku's developing them a little bit ahead of him.
Yeah,
so it's kind of just like it seems like maybe unfortunate timing for her.
I think she's a little like. Still confused in her own right, and even like in the most recent episode where they were asked if they were a couple, and she's like, no, we're friends, and he kind of cut her off. It was like, we're just acquaintances. Mm-hmm. And I think she, like, he had been struggling with that throughout mm-hmm. the episode. Was like, what is our relationship, you know, what is my relationship with these girls? And you could tell she was upset by that because at the very least, like after their bonding over, you know, the feudal era, of Japan, yeah. they at least could probably be considered friends.
Yeah.
But XCOM, do you know anything about the premise for the show?
I do not.
So it's a harem where the five girls are quintuplets.
Yes, I got that. That part I understood.
I figured you'd probably catch on, but like, I posted a joke on Twitter where I was like, I'm just waiting for the twist, because there's always a twist. where it turns out that they're not really five sisters; they're really just five aspects of the same girl, and that's how they'll get out of the who will he pick?
and their intelligence has all been divided. Five different ways.
Yeah, because together they can all score 100 on a test.
Yeah, so that matches up with Uesugi's ideas that he can improve them all by improving one or something like that. I forget what that was.
No, his whole joke, he was like, I just need to focus on the one that ones that are failing, and it turns out that they were all failing.
Right. Yeah.
But then he discovered that when they took the same test, together, collectively, they scored 100, which means that none of them got the same correct answers. Mm-hmm. So collectively they equal one brain, and I'm over here like, you know, maybe he doesn't have to choose. Maybe he'll just marry them all when they fuse back into one. Yeah. But you know, that's anime bullshit.
I've added that to my list of shows to watch.
Yeah. And they're all.
I feel like this should be more like a what should XCOM watch next?
Once again, like all the girls are blessed with the thickness.
Yeah, I'm looking at the cover pick, and yeah, they all.
Yeah, I like that because they don't do like, okay, this is the one that's like a. Like she's smaller, like a lolly or something, or small chest or something.
It's hard to justify that if they're quintuplets.
Yeah, so it's good that they went the route that they did.
I think the gags were, you know, like Miku was pretending to be Yotsuba. I thought that was actually really funny because you obviously, like us as the viewers, could tell that it wasn't Yotsuba, but. The joke went to somewhere where like he grabbed Yotsuba. He's like, "Look, it's your doppelganger." Oh, yeah. And when Itsuki showed up wearing a yukata and she had her hair up, he's like, "Who are you?" Yeah. And she's like, "It's me." He's like, "Don't go changing your hair. I can't tell you guys apart."
Mob Psycho 100.
Oh, so good.
Phenomenal. They're getting into a pretty decent arc right now. It was a really good first episode that, spoilers, ended with Mob waking up and he seems to be without his powers in whatever, like, world that he's in right now.
Yeah. I was honestly just surprised that he fought something that he couldn't instantly defeat. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess we had that before, but... it's some, you know, like, it's been a while since I watched Mob Psycho 100, so you kind of, like, get into the same mentality that, the show is just One Punch Man, but with psychic powers. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh no, a Mob isn't, he's not invincible.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that episode with, the possessed girl, I thought was really great. Mm-hmm. And the episode before that, like they've been kind of, you know, doing things where Mob is kind of questioning whether what he's doing is okay.
Yeah.
And I like that
Reagan is perceptive of that.
Yeah.
And kind of saying with that episode with the family saying, you know, I don't want to push him to. If he doesn't want to do this, I'm not going to make him do it. And I also liked when they were doing rock, paper, scissors. He's like, I think I'm going to throw paper. Or no, maybe scissors.
It's all about the mind games with rock, paper, scissors. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The top two for me this season would be the Promised Neverland.
Oh yeah.
Are you watching that one, XCOM? Is that one you should be checking out?
I actually just added it to my list, just looking at winter stuff, but no, I'm not watching it.
Okay, so we shouldn't spoil, but it's been really good with the intensity of certain scenes, and as more people kind of get in on the plan. And then Kaguya-sama, Love Is
Kaguya War. Has been great, dude.
Yeah, like, yeah, the gags are absolutely fantastic on that
show. I will say that I've watched a few episodes of that. Not enough to say that I'm watching the show, but I've...
So, there's only four episodes out, man.
Well, I know, but I'm 2 weeks behind, at least.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The whole lunch thing was hilarious, though.
Man, I'll say that Kaguya-sama, every episode has a different ending sequence, but episode 3's ending was one of the greatest things I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw the details. There's like 1800 keyframes and over 1000 in between.
Good stuff. Lord. Like you know, they were saying that yes, it was rotoscoped, but that doesn't mean it's easy. And like the fabric animation on her skirt while she's dancing is just it's mind blowing.
Right. Yeah.
But no, I love Kaguya-sama. Like I was actually at Barnes & Noble today, and they had volume three of it, and I would have, like, if they had had one, two, and three, I would have bought them all. But, you know, because they only had the third one, I was like, nah, I'll hold off. Yeah,
gotta read from the start.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's an episode I actually, like, rewatched a couple episodes. Like, I enjoy watching them. That's kind of unusual. and the opening sequence I really like, in addition to that ending. It's got, like, kind of a James Bond-y sort of look, like Casino Royale a little bit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I really enjoyed the cat ears episode. That was today's. What else? God, like, there's so many things that, like, just stand out to me. Like, the gags are so strong, but, like, the execution of the gags is what makes it stand out.
The one about how many high school kids have done it.
And Kagi's complete misunderstanding of what the question was.
I did it a long time ago.
I did it with my baby nephew. Also a baby cousin or whatever. And she was like, I know you do it with your dog all the time. And he's like, you what? And she's like, don't look at me that way. Oh, God.
And then the last one for me would be Dobrobro, although I've fallen behind on it.
I'm behind too. Something I caught up on today was domestic girlfriend, which I wouldn't say it's bad. I do believe it's pretty trashy. Like, I'm over here, like, the teacher is, she's a terrible adult, and
she
knows exactly what she's doing. Because, like, the situation, like, you know, maybe, like, when she was just his teacher, you could be like, maybe she doesn't realize that she's, like, you know, flirting with this kid or whatever, or that, you know, maybe, like, she shouldn't be quite so nice to him.
Okay. I got it. There's a reason why she is the way she is.
I'm sure there is. But, like, you know, it gets worse when, you know, she starts living with him, and then the whole thing with the affair.
Yes.
I'm just like, well, first of all, like, that guy is a piece of shit. Who she was, because, like, he shows up and he's got this, the most, like, he's not like a stereotypical villain. He's just like, no, I actually really do love her, and, you know, I plan on divorcing my wife or whatever. And I'm like, you lying motherfucker. Like, I'm like, okay, yeah, he's been saying, I'm sure, how long have you been saying that? That you've been wanting to divorce your wife.
I have so many words I want to say because I'm caught up with the manga, but I can't say anything.
But anyway, I like Rui a lot. She's the little sister who he had sex with in the first episode, which ironically turns out to be, eventually becomes his little sister. Because of their setup, which I still find hilarious. Her character, like, she, I kind of like how she has, like, low, what's the word, social skills.
How virtually no social skills.
Yeah, she's just bad at interacting with people, and she just comes off as standoffish. But it's not like she wants to be that way.
That's actually why she slept with him in the first place.
Right. No, yeah, like, I can totally tell that that her older sister was like, you just wouldn't understand because you're a kid.
Uh-huh.
And she said the same thing to MC-kun, and he was just, and, like, you could see the heartbreak on his face. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, you're not exactly being an adult yourself. But anyway, I'm enjoying it. Yeah. It's, again, like, it's pretty trashy, but
it is a super soap opera with, that it's a manga soap opera. That's all it is.
Oh, it totally is. Or
anime soap opera.
That's one reason why I couldn't, why I didn't decide to watch it going forward. I just thought, like, I don't know, the tone of that show is weird, and I just kind of feel like
it's a little bit more lighthearted than you would think. Yeah. In certain places. But anyway.
Yeah.
Anything else that comes to mind?
I'm behind on JoJo.
I'm still caught up on it. like, I still enjoy it, but it's also kind of like, I don't know if it's just this season or if that, like, I'm used to the whole JoJo formula that I'm just a little not as excited about it. Yeah. I thought today's episode, or excuse me, yesterday's episode was really good. JoJo or Giorno kind of got he had been kind of out of focus for a while. And this most recent fight kind of brought him back to the front, and he kind of learned a little bit more about his powers and stuff. And I was like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah. That happened with me during Diamond is Unbreakable, because you know these series are going to run on for 30-plus episodes, and they kind of have that, the way the formula is, at some point it kind of feels like not exciting. It's generally entertaining, but it just kind of feels like we're just
going through the motions.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, okay, he has the upper hand, but it turns, but they're going to find a way to turn it around.
Yeah. And they're going to take every moment to explain every move.
Yeah. But anyway, it's been relatively decent. We didn't really talk a lot about Shield Hero, but I've been enjoying it so far. That's one of those shows that definitely has, it's surrounded by controversy and stuff like that, as there's always want to be a show. XCOM, you've been reading the manga for that one before the anime even came out.
Yes, and quite honestly, the controversy for me came out of nowhere. The whole thing about Shield Hero is knocking him down to his lowest point very early on in the series. And it's like, what is the worst thing you could accuse someone of? Like, a guy, what's the worst thing you could do? Accuse them of rape. And that's the whole reason. He got everything taken from him. He was accused of rape. So his reputation was destroyed. He had no money left over. And so he had to go from the very beginning. And on top of that, he didn't have a party, which made it very difficult because your only weapon is a defensive weapon, so you can't really do anything by yourself. It forced him to take up slavery, which made things so much worse for him. The whole thing just ended up blowing up in his face. And yeah. I kind of, if I was in that situation, I too would be like, you know what, just send me home.
Yeah, like, what I think is interesting is that people are kind of missing the point. They're like, oh, the show's glorifying slavery. I'm like,
it is not.
It's not. I'm like, dude, the whole point is that he was at such a low point that he would resort to even such a thing. But
I think everybody who says something like that is not watching the show. They're not paying attention. They're has it in this show, that means it's glorifying it. It's like, no, if you're paying attention, it's the complete opposite. Yeah. That's what he had to resort to.
Or even, like, you know, the fact that, you know, they used, what's the word? Rape allegations, false rape allegations as a plot point. And I'm like, look, yeah, I know that it's a hot topic issue nowadays, but that doesn't mean it should be off the board for, you know, fiction. And like, it's, and this isn't saying that, like, oh, all rape allegations are false. Like, no.
Yeah,
like,
nobody's ever said that.
This was clearly, you know, done with malicious intent or whatever. But the whole thing is that, remember, like, this dude was ripped from his world against his will, you know, to a place where, you know, he's being forced to fight for, like, he has no way to go back home. And then he's brought down to his lowest. I thought the setup was fine. The most recent, like, resolution with Raftalia, like, you know, the whole thing now is everyone's like, ah, she's best girl. I'm like, yeah, she's, I mean, there's not a whole lot of competition at the moment. Right.
With that in mind, I will say that I don't remember the whole her child phase being so impactful. I kind of feel like the anime, that's one of the things the anime kind of changed. Because, like, in the manga, she was a child for all of, like, a chapter, and then it was moved on, and they moved on. But
remember, like, it's based off a novel.
No.
And in the novel, apparently, that change in her wasn't done, like, it was happening throughout the novel, but, like, it, because it's told in first person, and the point was that he wasn't noticing it.
Yes.
And the fact that, like, you know, not only was he, because he was so depressed or whatever that he couldn't even taste food, that he wasn't noticing the change in her. And then, like, finally the big kind of, like, impact of, like, he noticed it.
Yes.
And she was like, I'm going to be there for you, you know, regardless, because, you know, you were there for me. And there was one, you know, that, like, oh, one of the complaints I saw was that, like, there's a scene where she's accusing the S.H.I.E.L.D. hero, or not even accusing him. She, Rough Talia, is basically saying that, like, you know, now Fumi saved me when I was, like, ill and sick and I was a slave and I was pretty much going to die at, you know, like, at any given moment. And he, like, gave me food and healed me and, you know, brought me to where I am now. And she's like, could you have done something like that? And he's like, yeah, well, I mean, of course I would have. And she's like, the exact line is like, well, then you would have a slave by your side too. But, you know, the thing is, like, he was trying to take the moral high ground. He was being a hypocrite, basically.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, you shouldn't have a slave because that's evil. It's vile. But the thing is, like, he's not doing anything about the institution of slavery in that country. He's not rescuing, like, he didn't go out of his way to rescue a little girl who was on her deathbed because he had no need to. And she's basically like, well, you know, you say you would do something, but you didn't. So anyway, I thought that was, you know, I thought it was handled well in the show. But
yeah.
There's always going to be people who take it the wrong way.
Okay, so I'm guessing that's the last of anime talk.
I think so. It's
kind of all. Yeah, actually, I want to bring this back since my anime has been reduced pretty severely. Like, you guys suggest things to watch.
Yeah, well, you need to come on the show a little more.
Ouch. Well, you have an open invitation.
Yeah. Yeah. As at least listen.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. As one of the founders of Animation, I think you have an open invitation.
But yeah, there's some good stuff that you should add. We'll be curious to know how you think about, like, Neverland and stuff throughout the season.
Yeah, I think I can commit to watching that.
Like, Neverland, we kind of glossed over it, but you definitely need to check that out. Don't read or look up anything about it. Just watch episode one. Okay. That was our advice when we talked about it on the show. Like, you need to let that wash over you unspoiled.
Hey everybody, J-Ware here, interrupting what originally was a recorded segment with me talking to two guys that could not give a damn about football, talking about Super Bowl 53. I will be honest and say that I predicted the Patriots to win by the score of 31-28, because nobody predicted 13-3. Like, I understand if people were playing a little risky and taking the under, which was 56, but to be 40 points off of the gambling line for that game is kind of impressive for the way the game is in this day and age and how the rules have been so favorable to offenses. And you think about how good the Rams offense has been this year, and the Patriots, they're the Patriots offense. They do their thing. But to see the Rams in a game earlier score 54 points and give up 51, to be stymied to barely get anywhere near the end zone. They didn't have a single play in the red zone all game. And the Patriots only had one. It was just a touchdown rush late in the fourth quarter there, or midway through the fourth quarter. But that's got to be disappointing for the Rams defense to put up your best game of the year against the GOAT, Tom Brady, and only allow that team 13 points, and for your offense to come out and barely do much of anything. It was very confusing with the run game with C.J. Anderson and Todd Gurley. It's kind of a curious thing, like, what's going on with Todd Gurley. Like, here's a guy that was close to being an MVP candidate a year or so ago, and now he's, you know, it seems like he's playing second fiddle to a guy they they signed off waivers in December in C.J. Anderson, and they want C.J. Anderson back next year. It's very surprising what's gone on with the running back situation with the Rams. And Jared Goff, I think he's still going to be a good quarterback in the NFL. I think he was just a step off, and he was going up against what I would say is a defensive masterpiece, where Bill Belichick and the former Patriots defensive play caller Brian Flores, now the Miami Dolphins head coach, made some major changes. And, you know, it seemed like, as far as the MVP is concerned, with Julian Edelman getting it, seemed like the logical choice. Although for me, because he had 140 yards and he was constantly getting first downs, it almost seemed like the Rams were almost like, let's just let Julian do his thing and then we'll win around everybody else. Like, I mean, Brady most of the night pretty much just threw to Edelman or Gronk. I mean, I don't think we ever really saw Hogan. They never made too many throws out of the backfield. It was surprising. But I think a defensive player should have gotten it in a game that was as low scoring as it was. Stephon Gilmore would have been a decent candidate with an interception. Probably the only candidate, really. But nobody really, I mean, that's the thing, though. It's like Edelman had all the yardage and stuff, and Gilmore did his thing, but there was nobody that was really had these numbers that just pop out at you. And so for that reason, the only number that did kind of stand out was like 140 yards for Edelman. So it makes sense. I think a defensive player would have been a better fit for MVP in a Super Bowl dominated by defense, but you know, you can't really award the head coach as that, or you know, the defensive play caller. So yeah, that was a really disappointing Super Bowl and quite a bore fest from beginning to end, really. Not too many commercials were that good or interesting. The ones that, you know, there was the Avengers teaser, there was the Captain Marvel trailer. I think that's coming out in March. The NFL 100 commercial was actually pretty good, with stars past and present. There's more action in that game than not game, but more action in that commercial than probably the entire game. And then seeing the sort of extended trailer of the Microsoft Adaptive Controller and the kids that have physical disabilities being able to play with it and seeing the emotion of the family. A nice touching commercial. So, and Maroon 5, I mean, the only thing they did was beat the Rams and score, I guess. But I don't know. It's kind of cliche and easy to say the halftime performances are bad. The only one that I can think of that really stood out to me was any kind of decent was Super Bowl 48 with Bruno Mars, which was the last time a Super Bowl was boring. But that was boring in the way of the Broncos came out really flat and the Seahawks just pounced on them. And thus was born the era of the Legion of Boom with Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas, all those guys. So blowouts are boring in their own way because one team is so dominant and the game just seems over so early. But this one just had a weird stench to it, I think, from beginning to end. So those are my thoughts on Super Bowl 53. Thank you for sticking with me for this little bit. And time to wrap up the podcast. And that is it for episode 280 of the Anavision podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Anavision.org is the website where you can find us. And all of our social networking sites, such as Facebook, where we're most active, and Twitter, when you can find notifications of when the episodes are out. Sometimes Anime Blue on Twitter is faster than the Twitter account. So follow him, too.
Yeah, he's it's been a while since we shouted him out. listener of the show, always giving us feedback and stuff. Usually when we talk shit about Naruto.
Yeah, that's when he gets he's big into the Sakuga scene and stuff like that. So I think it's AnimeBlue00 on Twitter, if I'm correct. Yes, I do. Yeah.
And I still love Naruto Anime Blue.
Yeah.
Except also, Black Clover is, I've gotten into it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I need to catch up on that, too.
We might have to... are you going to see I Want to Eat Your Pancreas next week, Amru?
I need to check when that's coming out, but I probably am off. So I haven't bought a ticket yet or anything, but yeah, I can probably make it.
Yes, because the 7th is when the subbed version comes out, and... 10th is when the dubbed version comes out of February. Yeah,
I might have to watch the dub because I think my eyes might be a little too blurry to read the subtitles for that one.
Yeah. So, we'll probably talk about that soon. So,
definitely Gundam Narrative when that comes out.
Yeah.
I'm planning on marathoning Unicorn again to get ready for it. Because Narrative is a direct sequel to Unicorn.
I might have to do something similar. I might have to brush up on my Unicorn knowledge if I'm going to see that one then.
Hey, you might just take another Saturday and do a 7.5-hour marathon of Unicorn.
Maybe you should mention that before we sign off. Amuro gave me a second chance to watch Is It Wrong to Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon? Because I'd been playing the Danmachi Memoria Frieza game.
Can we just talk about that for a second? That like Jero hated when he first watched the show, but was playing the game. And I think that's because there was you started playing during the Kino's Journey collaboration event, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, you were getting a little bit more into it, and you were like, you know what, maybe I should give it another chance. So I facilitated that.
That game is practically just the series. It goes through the series in the game.
It does. And then it there's a lot of events of original stuff, too. And they have covered a few like the light novel, some of the light novel spinoffs and stuff like that. But so Jero, you watched a. We sat through all of season one in the OVA. So what did you think after we were wrapped up with that?
I thought it was really good. I thought it was a really fun series that probably at the time I wasn't too, I was coming off my disinterest in Sword Art Online. And I probably couched my disinterest of Dungeon in that.
I'm going to say a lot of people were making comparisons between, it doesn't help that they have the same voice actor as the main character. Yeah. They Danmachi does have a kind of it's not a game world, but the mechanics of the world kind of are based off of gaming and stuff. So I can see why.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stats. That's admittedly, it's something about Rising of the Shield Hero that I'm not entirely interested in watching it right now because it combines isekai and video game stats in an anime.
Yeah.
I know it's petty, but I can only watch so many shows. Dungeon was really good. I liked it. A lot of the characters I really liked and liked even more so after having watched the series, like Ryu. I love Ryu.
You are not alone, friend.
Yeah. And then Hephaestus also, redhead, typical.
I'd like to do a extent, EXT episode on Danmachi at some point because the movie is coming out soon. I would love to get you to read the novels because I think they're even better than the anime. They're just really well written and they're page turners. You just can't put them down the way they're written. But yeah, I would definitely love to have an EXC episode on that because I'm still obsessed with the game and the franchise overall. So,
yeah, and through watching the anime, it made me more interested to do other things in the game that I hadn't looked at, and sort of doing more of the farming stuff and dispatch quests and getting more into the story. And I admit I was just kind of going through the story chapters, just getting the S rank and the Iris, but then I realized, like, oh, this is actually, yeah, the anime for in Belle's story. And then I started watching some of the cutscenes and stuff. It's like, oh, that's pretty cool. All right, so for Amuro, XCOM, and the absent Steve, I'm Jero. We will see you next time on the AnimeVision Podcast. Believe it.